Welcome to the MGO podcast, where we repeatedly use a term from video game speedrunning to say the shots have to go in.
So an interesting week for Michigan basketball that I say does draw them closer to the tournament. You know, getting a win against Purdue, a 1A, quad 1A victory, and making that a pounding, which helps with your net rankings quite a bit, and then losing to Ohio State. I mean, at the beginning of the week, I think you would probably take that split, despite the fact that both those were home games. But just the nature of the Ohio State game was just like, hit a shot. Right?
Yeah. I mean, if you said we were going to go 1-1 against Purdue and Ohio State, I'd be like, yay, we beat Ohio State. And God, I mean, as far as like 1-1 results out of those two games, like this is probably the best that like, okay.
Before we get to that, the MGO podcast is sponsored by Unground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out UGPMichiganApparel.com or find our stuff at MGO Blog Store. We also want to thank our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, Signal Wire from the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers podcast, Team Fan Club at Prentice 4M, which is where we usually are. And we have a special guest this week. We welcome in Matt D., who knows more about basketball than the two of us combined. How you doing, Matt?
Good. How about yourself? 1-1, good. Not so bad on the week. So I think we'll kind of take it given where we were at coming into this week.
Yeah, and so we'll start with the Ohio State game, and you go and you look at the shooting splits in this game, and they are remarkable. So Ohio State gets 12 looks at the rim. Michigan gets 28, and Michigan has exactly one player take more than one shot in the mid-range. That's Hunter Dickinson. Everybody else, like, there's a one floater from Jones and one floater from Brooks, and that's the only things that got classified as mid-range stuff. And a lot of Dickinson's quote-unquote mid-range stuff is like post hooks that are just outside the paint. So it's like a different kind of thing than a pull-up jumper. And as Matt has detailed on Twitter, and I think everybody watching this game was like, make a shot. Because Michigan had 5 dunks in this game. They go 4-17 from 3 on looks that are mostly very good. And, you know, the story of the game is that Michigan shoots about what they shot at. They about shoot what Ohio State shot in the mid-range at the rim. So it's 12 of 25 for Ohio State in the mid-range and 15 of 28 for Michigan at the rim. And EJ Liddell had an amazing game. And he's a guy who, you know, you got to tip your hat to a lot. But really, to me, this is just a game where this is your fourth game in, of the week, basically. And you get the looks and you just can't convert them.
Yeah, so, you know, kind of pushing a little bit further what Brian said, I thought Juwan Howard did an impeccable job coaching, particularly in that first half. I had him down for, he schemed up 12, and I mean wide, wide open shots. I detailed that on Twitter with film, and we were only able to cash in on 6 of those. 3 of those were layups, 1 missed by Jones, 2 missed by Eli, 3 threes, Caleb, T-Will, and Eli, and you know, in a game where the talent is more or less relatively equal, you're going to have to cash in at more than a 50% rate. There's just not much more we could do from a coaching perspective than that. And, you know, some of that is just the nature of just college basketball, right? Guys are not going to convert every open look they get. But I think typically, like what Brian said, on a normal day, we're probably converting maybe 2 or 3 or more of those at the rim. And this game, I think, probably looks a bit different than it did.
Yeah, I kind of thought the strategy for Ohio State was just like let Michigan shoot outside because they would double Hunter and then there would be a wide open shooter outside. If they went to zone, Michigan was just ready to pass the ball quickly between 2 guys and one of them would be open for 3. And so their strategy was kind of to leave him singled for a moment with Zed Key and then bring Liddell in as soon as he's about to shoot. And Michigan was prepared for that. Like, they were totally ready. They anticipated what was going to happen. It would be like, you know, they called the exact right plays and just could not connect on any of the open downfield shots, which is the, you know, they had their wide open threes and dunks. Like, that's what you got.
I.e. the high leverage moments. That's really what it came down to, yeah.
Yeah, and if you look at the ancillary stats, too, they paint the same picture, right? Like, Michigan has 16 assists in this game. That's two-thirds of their makes. Ohio State has 6. And Michigan won the offensive rebound battle decisively. Strangely, because Devontae Jones got 5, but whatever. So that's 2-10 right there. They have a few more turnovers at Ohio State, but if you just go look at all the shots in this game, and you don't look at what happens when the shots get to the basket, and you ask me who's winning this game, I'm going to say Michigan by a pretty decent margin, but the shots don't go down.
I concur. Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's the players. Maybe that's the fact that they had that COVID pause, and so now they have a really compressed schedule. And, you know, their back-to-back thing is a real thing in the NBA, and it's possible that 4 games in 7 days has a similar effect. Or maybe it's just random, but you can't really ask for more. The problem with this team is, like, last year's team probably could have won this game even shooting poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would have converted at the rim more because they were bigger, more athletic. The shots that they were getting would have been more efficient if you ran the same kind of stuff and got the same kind of looks. And this team is 2 or 3 steps back from that. So when they don't play well, they don't win. And last year's team was able to not play well and win a number of games.
So I want to take the flip side of this. It is a double-edged sword. As Brian said, you know, we don't really have a ton of margin for error because of the I believe we started 7-7. So every win functionally is almost a must win. But if we want to project out, right, I do kind of like where Michigan is at in terms of the trajectory, because the defense seems to have turned a corner. Like, we're not playing, you know, some weak schedule. I believe Purdue was number one in the country in offensive rating per KenPom heading into that game. And I thought Michigan played about as well as
they're number two historically.
Yeah.
Like, Gonzaga last year was number one and Purdue is number two. And that goes up over the course of a season. So, like, that's incredible that they were even that high.
The rotations off ball, the individual defense, like I detailed this on Twitter. When you're getting Devontae Jones and Kobe Bufkin getting stops on Jaden Ivey on an island, yeah, those are the kind of things that I'm like, all right, we're turning the corner. Caleb Houston has become a serviceable defender. He's tagging Rollman. He's making solid off ball rotations, less head scratchers. You know, I know Liddell got his yesterday, but I mean, those were tough NBA shots. That guy basically went full David West NBA mode with like 10 foot jump hooks. He had to hit at least 6 or 7 of them. He got a few lucky bounces on a few 2 or 3 possessions. I mean, there's just not much you can ask for defensively.
Yeah, and when Trevion Williams is the one doing that to you, you're like, okay, that's what Trevion Williams does to you. But when, like, it's, you know, Liddell and Kyle Young, it's like, come on! Like, that's not what these guys are. Like, Liddell's a great player. No. That's not his thing.
Liddell is a guy who hits those shots. Like, that's a big part of his game. Like, he's 6'7". He's really athletic for 6'7", but he's like not a post guy. And like, you could see that he wasn't even trying to work his way to the rim against Musa Diabate. Like, he was trying to get to that spot on the floor and take the fadeaway jumper because it's good enough for him for it to work. And it's just, yeah, I mean, he made some shots. He had some incredible defensive plays. He had a KenPom MVP performance, and Michigan didn't get good shooting for Hunter Dickinson. He has a 75 O rating in this game. He has 3 turnovers and only 14 points on 17 shooting opportunities. So, you know, it's, if Dickinson has an off game, you're probably not going to win, despite the fact that, yeah, from a coaching perspective, this was excellent because Ohio State got a ton of ugly looks and they got enough of them to fall, and Michigan got clean ones and just couldn't make it work.
Well, Hunter had 0 assists in this game. That's not right. Like he's not a 75-0 rating, and like, that's the lie. There is that he got the ball out of there, especially when they were bringing doubles down on him, and he got him to open shooters. So I mean, it goes back to the ball didn't go down.
I mean, well, yeah, kind of wrapping this up and bringing this all, tying this all together. I think we're at a point in the season where we have a big enough sample to kind of make somewhat of a conclusion in terms of how things are going. And Brian, really, this stuck me what he just said. If Dickinson doesn't have a good game, the likelihood of Michigan winning any single game against legitimate competition just probably isn't that good. It's because we just don't really have anybody in the perimeter to just go get us a bucket. That's just really what it comes down to. You know, Brian and I were chatting this a few minutes ago. You cited some stats to me about what did we take, one mid-range jumper all game?
Two for people not named Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah. So really what that tells us is that there's just a lack of shot creation from the perimeter. It's basically all scheme. We don't really have any late clock options. So that's going to limit our options in terms of what we can do if Hunter is not having an All-American game, which has been pretty common for him of late, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, in some contexts, I would be like, okay, that's a problem. In this particular game, and I don't think anyone took a mid-range look because nobody had to.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, like, they were, believe me, open at the rim, open from three. I mean, you cannot get, at the high major level, you're just not going to get more open shots than that. You just have to connect. It's really that simple.
Well, and Devontae was making it. I mean, that was part of like Liddell being used as as a second trap for Hunter. But like Devontae Jones was getting to the rim consistently. I don't think we've even seen him do that yet.
Well, they ran some sets, right, and we've seen this with Purdue, where they're using Hunter as a decoy. And if you're, like you said, if they're sucking them out, that's just less help at the rim. And you know, for whatever struggles that Jones had early on, he's been pretty solid during this last month or so. He's I don't know if you guys saw this on Twitter. Michigan's ball screen offense, including passes, is actually better this year with Jones than it was with Smith last year. Yes. We're approaching 90th percentile in the country for that.
That's impressive. I mean, he's definitely I think we're done calling for Frankie at this point. Like
well, he's you know, he's maintained his 2-point percentage, which is never great, but it's acceptable. Then his assist rate in Big Ten play is now 30 versus a 15 TO rate. So that is, and Smith was so small that he was always going to be turnover prone because the angles he needed to make the passes were just more difficult. Like, you remember the Darius Morris pick and roll stuff where he just had pterodactyl arms, so he could make wraparound passes from virtually any position. Smith was the opposite of that, and Devontae Jones is somewhere in the middle, so he's got much more margin for error when he's trying to make these passes. So yeah, he stepped it up. The only kind of issue for him in Big Ten play has been his 3-point shooting, which has been rough. And that's
I mean, he can normally get it up. He gets it in at a fairly good rate when he's wide open. He's not going to get it up on his own. But like the fact that it's not going in when he's wide open is starting to get into, you know, Xavier Simpson levels of, oh God.
He's been able to compensate for that to a certain extent with the floater. It's been as advertised. He's been hitting that shot from 7 to 10 feet. But as you guys say, you just needed him to hit that above the break three once Hunter gets doubled at a respectable clip. It doesn't have to be 40%, but it needs to be somewhere in those mid-30s just to keep the defense honest.
All right. Well, let's take a break, come back, talk about the Purdue game.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Eufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up, and you can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care Or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
So Purdue is a much happier occurrence, a 82-58 beatdown of the top team in the conference via KenPom. And again, shooting variance does come into this because Michigan scorches the Nets. They're 12 of 21 from three. Purdue goes 4 of 18, and particularly on a few different Mason Gillis shots, they got let off the hook. Mm-hmm. But that would not have been able to close the gap here because Michigan puts up 1.3 points per possession. This was a game again where Musa Diabate, we saw him get a dunk against Ohio State. He had three or four in this because Michigan was putting Hunter Dickinson on the perimeter. He was drawing Zach Edey or Trevion Williams with him, and then the dive to the basket. Purdue just didn't have the size to contest that in any way from Diabate.
So what we've seen here recently, and I want to say maybe the last 3, 4, or 5 games in the 2 weeks, is exactly what Brian said. We're pulling Hunter Dickinson out, and Juwan Howard is punishing the opposition that is utilizing blitz screens or their trapping. He's having Musa set go screens or just slip the screen in its entirety. And if you're going to come out and respect Hunter, whether it be Jones or Eli, they're going to hit Musa on that slip, and it's going to be a dunk every time. So, you know, sort of using Hunter as a decoy to get Musa that slip and finish, that's been pretty key. And we saw it again against Ohio State where he's pulling that out of the playbook, and at some point opposing defenses are going to have to make that adjustment. So we'll see. But so far, that's been an effective tool.
I mean, keep in mind, you know, you mentioned he was doing it against Edey. Edey wasn't out there for, like, almost the entire first half, and then he got a couple quick fouls. Like, that, I think that had I'm sure Purdue fans are, like, pointing at that even more than the 3-point. Like, Edey not being out there really changes the way that Michigan can play offense, because Williams is not nearly the shot protector that he is, or just, like, the size in the lane that he is.
Yeah, so Michigan again won the offensive rebounding battle against a team that was coming into the game was one of the top, I think, 20 offensive rebounding teams in the country. Not having Edey around had a lot to do with that. There was a moment in the second half where you know, he just, there is an offensive rebound. I don't even know if he left his feet.
And he was behind Hunter, too.
He was behind Hunter Dickinson. And he just was like, that's mine.
Seriously, I'm curious now, what is this guy's standing reach? Does he even have to jump to touch the rim?
I don't know. I bring this up all the time, but I just cannot believe that that guy was ranked in like the 300s by the recruiting industry. Like,
that's absurd. Like, the guy's basically Boban. I mean, he's massive.
And he was a hockey player. How is he not at Michigan?
I mean, he was so off the radar. I don't even know if Michigan knew who he was. And also, like, he's the biggest man in America. He has to go to Purdue. It's in the contract. But yeah, so Musa has four dunks in this game. And then, you know, Brooks and Dickinson go off from three. Houston goes off from three because Michigan, again, is able to exploit a defense that has a bunch of issues to get a bunch of open looks. And in this game, they went down at an extremely high clip. So we're saying the same thing about this game as the Ohio State game, because it was a beautiful display of offensive execution. And the only difference is the shots went down, not going down.
Yeah, I think the level of execution was pretty similar in both games, as Brian noted. It's just a matter of, you know, what do we say in the NBA? It's a make or miss league, and that's pretty much Michigan's season in a nutshell. You're going to get the scheme. You're going to get the open looks. The defense appears to be turning in a corner to a top 40-ish level defense, and if they can do that in conjunction with hitting open shots, I think it bodes well going down the stretch here.
Well, in addition to the offensive execution, this game saw a really interesting adjustment on Jaden Ivey. So in the first game, Jaden Ivey was coming off ball screens and getting downhill and getting to the rim, and Michigan had no chance. In this game, they outright trap him on virtually all of those, and he ends up with an O rating under 100. He has five turnovers, no assists. He shoots okay, but Ivey was not the dominant factor he was in the first game, because in the first game you're just like, I mean, it's Jimmy's and Joe's, we can't win against this team because they have Jaden Ivey. And then in the second game, he puts up 18 points, but not efficiently. And for that change to be so clearly a result of an adjustment that Juwan Howard and his coaching staff made is another, like, I think, really great sign for the long-term future of Michigan basketball.
Yeah, I mean, they survived that to it. There was a point where the fan base Chrysler started yelling overrated at Jaden Ivey, and I was like, no, that don't was like, do that.
That was extremely. I don't know why you would ever do that.
I mean, this guy is college version Ja Morant. Really, he is explosive. I think he's shooting over 40% from three, if I'm not mistaken. Which is
on the season, yeah.
That's absurd, given his athletic ability, his positional size at the college level.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan is bending their defense forward, and it created some open shots for Stefanovic and for Gillis, who are normally, you know, knockdown shooters. So I think we escaped it a little bit. Like, you know, they figured out what we were doing. It's just they didn't knock down their shots.
You know, what I will say, though, is that, you know, not that it matters all that much, and especially in the case of Stefanovic, but those looks were from 5 or 6 feet beyond the line. That's the one thing I did notice. They were like 2 or 3 feet beyond the NBA line. And when you're dealing with college kids, I'm sure that has at least somewhat of an impact.
Gillis's looks were clean and open and not that great. But yeah, Stefanovic was just getting stuff up. And a couple of Ivy's looks too were like, what? They were just jacked up shots. So a little bit of frustration, I think, leaking through for guys who are normally scorers. And Stefanovic just hits one of his 5 threes, doesn't really do a whole lot else in this game. So I thought that for the most part, Michigan did a good job limiting the quality of the looks with the exception of Gillis. The foul trouble on Edey was something that really came up. But, I mean, you got to give Hunter Dickinson credit, because the first possession of the game, he's driving baseline on Edey and is quicker than Edey and gets to the spot first and gets pushed over. So it's not like he was picking up ticky-tack stuff on offensive rebounds. He was being forced to defend by Hunter Dickinson and then was not able to play much in that game.
You know what's sort of lost in all this is that because he's playing at such an incredibly high level, like, Dickinson is clearly gimpy, and he has been... I mean, his effort in that second half in particular against Purdue, sort of the agility he showed, was it an ankle or a knee? He's clearly got a bum leg somewhere. I don't know what the extent of what the injury is exactly, but his effort and engagement level, like, seriously, it was incredible. It was a really, really gutsy effort from him. Loved what I saw from him.
Yeah, I mean, he's diving on the floor for a couple possessions. And that was, you know, Ohio State game, to go back to that quickly, there were a couple of, like, bad shots that rimmed out and, like, turned, or Caleb Houston had another adventurous trip to the on a 3-and-2 breakaway. And then, you know, Hunt turns that from a turnover into a jump ball. And I think there were, like, two or three of those in that game, and there were a couple in the Purdue game, too. And, like, I mean, you're not normally getting that out of your big guy, especially when he's hurt.
He's maximizing what may be characterized as some limitations elsewhere, for sure. There's no question about that.
Yeah, so after this very hectic week, Michigan gets a lot of time off. So they played Saturday, won't play again until Thursday, where they'll go to Iowa, they'll go to Carver, Hawkeye, and hopefully be able to maintain this form of offensive and defensive execution and maybe just hit some shots.
or the other guys won't. Like, we could have it doesn't necessarily have to be the same combination of one team hits some, the other team is hitting nothing every single game.
Well, if we don't know anything else, you're going to get them. You're going to get the open looks against Iowa. That's baked in.
The thing is, like we just were out of opportunity. Like, that's happened to us before this season, and it's like, how many times are we going to lose a game to RNG when, you know, every single game is a, you know, tournament death possibly.
Well, I mean, I feel pretty good about this kind of matchup now, because Purdue and Ohio State are both the same kind of team as Iowa. Mm-hmm. They both have top 10 offenses. They both have defenses that are ranked around 100th. And Iowa, surprise, surprise, they have the number 5 offense in the country and the number 112 defense. So this is going to be another situation where Michigan is going to get open looks and they're not going to have dead legs. You're going to get a little bit of time for Hunter to heal. Like, I feel fairly optimistic about being able to go into Iowa and come out with a win.
Yeah, I echo that. I think if Michigan's defensive turnaround was real and lasting, which I'm inclined to think it is, I don't fear going into Iowa. I think that's a very winnable game, which, you know, I'm not going to say it negates the Ohio State loss, but it just gives us a little bit more margin for error down the stretch if you can pick up that road win.
I think you two are both insane. Have you do not remember what happens when we go to Iowa? Our center gets three fouls in 3 seconds, and then we spend whole game with, you know.
I'm not saying that like I'm like banking on a win.
Yeah, no. I'm just like saying that it's a winnable game, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
I'm just saying like the over under on Jaren Faulds having 5 minutes in this game.
fair point.
There's been a lot. I've seen things in Iowa. Okay.
In fairness, though, Faulds hasn't been all that bad in his limited minutes. I mean, we got to be honest here.
I could see Faulds actually pouring it in against Iowa.
I mean, the guy went bam out of bio for a game. I mean,
I'm relatively sanguine about the ability of Hunter Dickinson to stay on the floor against North Dakota transfer Philip Rabraca. So, yeah, I think we'll be able to work that out.
I've been burned.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. And now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Oh, Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com, that's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Front, Michigan's coaching carousel has finally come to a halt with the hire of Jesse Minter, who was Vandy's DC last year. Before that, spent 4 years with the surprise Baltimore Ravens. We talked about him on the last podcast because he was a pretty obvious continuity candidate. And one interesting thing about Minter is that, unlike McDonald, who had been an NFL guy exclusively, Minter has actually spent a lot of time coaching in college. He's actually been a DC on the FCS level for a couple of years, and then he was at Georgia State for four more.
Yeah.
So unlike McDonald, I don't think he doesn't know what he's getting into in terms of the recruiting.
Yeah, he's not brand new to it, but like the level that he's coaching at is going to be a whole different thing. But yeah, he was a defensive coordinator when he was 26 years old.
Yeah, so that's probably Wunderkind territory, and his Vanderbilt defense was not great, but it did move up 20 spots from 122nd nationally, so that's a good start. The other defensive moves is that Steve Klinkscale gets a co-coordinator title because the pass defense was top 25. I don't know if that means anything functionally. It feels like it doesn't. Mike Elston comes over from Notre Dame to be the DL coach and recruiting coordinator, and Jay Harbaugh gets shuffled over to safeties for whatever.
Well, they wanted Bellamy to move to receivers, right?
Yeah, that's completely fine. It's just like he just bounces all over the place, and it's like, yeah, he's the special teams coordinator, and also he's doing other stuff.
I mean, one of these days, if he's bad at one of these jobs, then maybe I'll complain. But I mean, he built the running back room that we have. Before that, he coached Jake Butt to a Mackey and recruited like the next generation and like turned Gentry into a good tight end. And then you know, he comes back and he builds Eric All in a year. Like, that, everything he's touched has been so good that I think at this point, you know, if he's going to stick around, Dad's like, here, I'll give you some opportunities on defense, and then you look like a head coaching candidate. And I can't, you know, knock on wood, but I can't imagine he's going to be bad at this either. And even if he, like, isn't really a safeties coach, Minter coached safeties in the NFL. He started as a defensive backs coach before he was a defensive coordinator, and, like, that's his thing, is safeties. So I imagine Minter's going to be around too, and they'll have, you know, it's not like he's just flying solo and nobody else knows how to coach a safety on this team.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I wasn't criticizing it. It's just funny that Jay Harbaugh gets bounced around to wherever is convenient and just works out.
Right.
Offensively, as mentioned, Bellamy has moved to wide receivers coach. Sherrone Moore gets promoted to sort of a co-OC.
No, he was already co-OC last year.
Oh, well.
But he gets promoted to, like, to more than a title.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Matt Weiss becomes the official OC. I mean, I guess we're going to find out how broilsy Josh Gattis was. I've always been a little bit skeptical, right? Just in terms of, like, what the offense looked like last year. I mean,
well, I believe Sam when he says that Gattis had more control of the offense than Harbaugh's ever given another offensive coordinator.
Yeah,
but I mean, you're going up against, like, Tim Drevno, like I or Pep Hamilton, right? Like, Harbaugh has always kind of been the CEO of his offensive company, and Gattis, I mean, if he had more control, it doesn't necessarily mean he had 100% control, but I imagine it's probably going to be more of a shift back to Harbaugh is the CEO, and he's got a run guy and a run guy, and that's what they'll do.
Yeah. So, I mean, we talked about how this Harbaugh NFL flirtation seemed like it was squandering potential momentum for the team here, but, you know, the reshuffle of the coaching staff mostly seems to make sense. Not really changing things that you don't have to change. You have some people in some spots that make more sense for them personally. And I like Minter. I like his profile. I like how much experience he has despite being pretty young. I like his connection with the Ravens. I think that he was a candidate for the DC spot last year, and I think he'll be good.
Yeah, he's basically a McDonald with 8 years of experience, which, you know, we would have gone after him, I think, if McDonald, I think they actually, you know, Michigan hired McDonald when Minter was not yet hired by Vanderbilt, but it was, you know, I think he was the other guy that they're looking at for him. They certainly wanted him as a defensive backs coach. So just that alone probably means he's not, like, the super genius that McDonald is, but McDonald pointed to him. He's like, that was, you know, that was my partner in crime. That was the guy that I was doing all the stuff at the Ravens with. So continuity wise, you can't have made a better hire. And, you know, he's not, maybe he's 90th percentile instead of 97th percentile in, like, just whatever that secret genius sauce is. But he's going to have a lot more ideas this year, because ideas are going to have to create pressure, because you don't just have Aiden Hutchinson to do it for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
All right, so I want to set that baseline now, because when, you know, people look next year and they're like, you know, what happened? We were a top 12 defense last year, and this year we slipped down to 25. Like, that's good. If you lose Aiden Hutchinson and you only slip that far, you know, depending on how other slots work out and whatnot. But, I mean, they lost a lot of this defense. I mean, Dex Hill is another guy who kind of changed the way that offenses could play. And they have some freshmen that they brought in who have that kind of elite talent that could, you know, step in athletically. But Dex Hill was in year three, not in year one of doing that.
Yep.
You know, offensively, Gattis, like, I think Gattis was a loss. Like, I think that the things that he contributed, I think that he was the I agree with Sam that he was, like, the the blueprint for what the rest of the staff was supposed to be, right? Like, Harbaugh took a gamble with Gattis, got a young guy, somebody who's very positive, somebody who's really good at recruiting. And like when that worked out, that was the kind of guy that they targeted for the rest of their staff. Sherrone Moore moved up because, you know, he's got the same kind of thing. Ron Bellamy, Mike Hart, like these guys are all young dudes who are have very positive outlooks, who are very just they're excellent recruiters. Like that's what he's built his staff out of. Bellamy, I think, kind of covers what you had in Gattis as far as a recruiter in the receivers room. Grant Newsom was time to move him up anyway, but I mean it just kind of feels like we are doing it again without Gattis. That if you want to just see what the shape of the team is, that's what we lost.
Yep. So I mean, I don't know. Get on the recruiting trail now and start making up for lost time, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, if they could convince Dante Moore that Matt Weiss is a god, then that would be great. I think like they need that anchor for their class that they don't have right now because Moore is kind of wavering between Michigan and Notre Dame. But that's recruiting, which doesn't really fit well in a podcast right now. So do you want to talk hockey?
Yeah, let's do that.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
TeamFanClub.com asks you to become a team sponsor for your university by financially supporting a men's or women's team at the University of Michigan. Under name, image, and likeness, college athletes can now earn money. Name, image, and likeness have athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for your favorite team and coach with a sponsorship. As a sponsor, you can pay a one-time payment or monthly payment starting at $20. A monthly payment by you of $20 or more will help your school's athletes tremendously. All players share equally, not just the starters. Team Fan Club provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train every day. TeamFanClub.com provides stability for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. This product makes so much sense. So, go to TeamFanClub.com and sponsor your team today.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way.
Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
But I've been low-key, hated on by most of these niggas with no cheese. No deals and no G's, no wheels and no keys. No boats, no snowmobiles and no skis. Mad at me cause I can finally afford to provide my family with groceries. Got a crib with a studio and a saw full of tracks to add to the wall full of plaques. Hanging up in the office and back of my house like trophies. Did y'all think I'ma let my dough freeze? Oh please, you better bow down on both knees. Who you think taught you to smoke trees? Who you think brought you to ODs? Ice cubes and DOCs, the Snoop Dio double G's, and a group that said motherfucker the police.
So I got some heat for saying that Salt-N-Pepa's Push It was the most explicit song in history, which is fair. It's not true. But in terms of like songs from the 90s that got radio play that Tim Brando would know about. I want to stand by that. The point is, Michigan has retained the most phallic trophy in college hockey and perhaps anywhere by getting the Iron D in a 7-3 victory over Michigan State.
You know, I brought my daughter to this and she thought the Iron D stood for daddy. So we're just going to go with that. All right.
All right. That makes it so much worse.
Brian, do you get like little copies of them every time they win? Like a little one, like how there's the little brown jugs and stuff?
No, I would have just a closet full of them at this point because Michigan State is bad at hockey
and has been for quite some time.
What is going on? They're so bad.
They don't really have any players. I mean, Alex and I were kind of talking about this. Like, I kind of like that Tucker kid. I think he has like close to 20 assists this year. But I mean, how many guys when they get the puck do you see? Oh, this guy's probably going to do something or anything.
Well, they had one guy like that, Mitchell Lewandowski, but he's been out, and so he's played about half their games, and they were fairly competitive when he was available. And they've lost 10 straight, and he's so that's probably a big factor.
As many,
like, I don't know if I've ever seen something like this, but so if you go to Michigan State stats on College Hockey News and you look at the plus minus column, except for like a couple of guys who just don't play, every Michigan State player is negative, except for Lewandowski, who's plus 11. So that's
well, props to him for getting out while he still could.
He was plus 11 in 15 games. He had 18 points in 15 games, and the rest of their team is just terrible.
I wonder if they're just recruiting based off of alliteration, because they've got some great names. Drew DeRitter, Nash Niehaus, whatever. Who was that other one they had? Jagger
Joshua.
Yeah. those are great names. I mean, if you're going to be awful, you might as well have, like, you know, awesome names out there.
I suppose. Yeah.
The weird thing about MSU is that it seemed like a couple years ago they were on the path to being decent again, at least respectable. I mean, they had that line with Patrick Kodorenko and Taro Hirose and then Lewandowski a few years ago. And then they just kind of stayed where they are. And now it sort of seems like they're backsliding. And in year five of Danton Cole, kind of got to wonder at this point how long the leash is for him, because it doesn't feel like they're making any progress and haven't been for a few years now. And I mean, they don't control play at all. I mean, Drew DeRitter's got a 923 save percentage, but he makes an average of 34 saves a game. I mean, they allow 35, 40 shots a game, and it's been this way for a while. And I don't really know what the path is to changing that anytime soon when you're this far into a coach's tenure.
Yeah, Michigan is 54th in Corsi. There's only
Michigan
59
State.
Teams. Michigan State is,
yeah.
There's only 59 teams.
Yeah.
So
not great.
Didn't they outshoot us in this game, or they had for a while at one point?
Well, through
watching the scoreboard,
through two periods, they were outshooting Michigan by one, and Bally Sports Detroit actually showed a pretty useful graphic where they actually included shot attempts.
Hey,
had 50% more than Michigan State, and they had just blocked a bunch of shots, and that feels like Michigan State what they've been, I don't know, for a decade now, where they just have, as Dave said, and I think at the previous podcast, they just have six goalies where they just don't pressure you at all in the defensive zone and just stand in front of the net and hope to block all the shots that come in.
They also don't just shoot the puck whenever. Like, they're not Penn State where they cross the blue line and start firing away. I mean, like, I've been tracking their shots for a few years now over this tenure, and it's like all of their shots tend to come from the house. So unless they're looking at a really good chance to score, they don't really shoot the puck at all. So if they don't get one of those, I mean, they had two shots in the second period on Friday and one shot in the third period on Saturday. I mean, you're not going to score when that happens ever.
I mean, that game on Friday, that second period, I mean, it was a lot like the U.S. women's team against Czech Republic earlier this week. The shots were like 55-3 in that game where the puck never left the Czech defensive zone. That was the whole second period on Friday. Michigan had almost 20 full minutes of extended offensive zone time. And like, you just can't be a competitive hockey team if you're letting that happen to you. And MSU lets that happen to them pretty regularly. And again, year five of the coach. These are all his players. I don't know what the path to getting their program back on track is at this point with this regime.
They've got, yeah, especially because the Friday game was, you know, was a 6-2, but it could have been 10. Michigan hit three posts in the first period, and no, it was just a non-competitive hockey game, and that's without four of Michigan's best players at the Olympics. So,
and against Michigan's third string goalie for the last 10 plus minutes.
But that's true. He gave up the only two goals, and the first one was just like, "Def, that you're a third string goalie." That's why
one of them was really bad.
Yeah. I mean, State's so slow. I lost count of how many times last night that, like, you know, we'd have Luke Hughes would pinch in and then like lose the puck and give up an odd man rush, and before they even barely got past the blue line, they get their entry, and all of a sudden the puck's being taken away because he just got caught up to. Like, they're so slow.
Yeah, that happened about four or five times on the weekend where I'm scrambling for my notebook trying to get my odd man rush notes, and then I'm like, oh, well, that's not really anything. So,
Turning it back more towards discussion of the actual Michigan hockey team and not just how bad Michigan State is.
Oh, come on, that's not very MGO.
I feel like, you know, in the absence of all these Olympians, Luke Hughes has really taken it to another level where he is dominant shift in and shift out in a way that he wasn't earlier in the season.
Well, Alex and I have been debating of who you'd rather have between Luke Hughes and Owen Power for the better part of this second half of the season, and we're both kind of leaning the same way.
I mean, Luke Hughes is shooting 20.3%, second on the team among guys who've taken more than four shots. That's not supposed to happen for a defenseman. Like, defensemen are supposed to shoot, you know, 5-10% range, but you just watch the quality of shots he gets, the way he's able to generate in the offensive zone. I mean, there was that play last night where he just carves up the MSU defense, drives right in, creates a chance point blank. I mean, he's just been so, so good this season. And, you know, I think the defensive impact has been a lot sort of better than I was expecting, not necessarily in terms of him in the zone, but like, Michigan doesn't really get caved in defensively when he's out there. There haven't been nearly as many sort of odd man rushes, purely the result of him, the way there was with his brother the second year. And I mean, 29 points in 30 games, like he's been phenomenal. And they've needed him these last 2 weeks, and they'll need him to be that way continuing going forward.
Yeah, and as you say, like, these aren't second assists where he's passing it from the blue line to some guy on the boards and then he does something, right? Like, he's scything into the zone. He has 13 goals this season. He's third on the team in goals.
I mean, that's close to, if not the record for goals for a Michigan defenseman.
So it tied Trouba for goals by a defenseman as a freshman. I don't know what the record is for a full career, but Hughes has got what, like, hopefully 10 more games, somewhere between 5 and 10 more games to play. Like, he's probably not done in the goal scoring department.
No,
no.
And did anyone else kind of leap out to you guys this weekend in terms of like, okay, this is a guy who's turning the corner. He seems like a different player than he was earlier in the season.
Well, I think a couple guys are getting some chances, and I don't know if they're turning the corner, but we saw Jimmy Lambert get a couple goals yesterday, and he's also hit the post a number of times in the last few weeks. And so he's had chances, and he's gotten opportunities, and it was nice to see him put a couple away. He also hit the post on a breakaway on Friday. So, you know, those are the kinds of guys that you want to see chip in these situations, because when Michigan plays against really good teams in the coming, you know, month plus, they're probably at times going to need that third liner or fourth liner to grab a goal every now and then. And the other guy, it's Philip LaPointe, who got a goal on a redirect, I think, from a Trescott shot on Friday. And so that at that time, that was two goals in two games for him going back to the Wisconsin series. And, you know, he hasn't even played that much. So getting guys like that to chip in, especially in this stretch, is, I think, pretty key.
I was pretty sad for Keaton Pearson because he made a great pass on Friday night, maybe the best pass of his Michigan career. And Luke Morgan's hands of stone just sent it way wide of the net, an empty net look. I was pretty disappointed for him. But, you know, it's tough to pull out specific guys when you just dominate, right, where everyone just looks really good. And so it's sort of hard to evaluate. But You know, look, I think that the penalty killing, especially on Saturday, obviously they gave up the two goals, but getting the two shorthanded goals. I mean, the penalty kill has been pretty darn good this season. I think that's just an interesting subplot. We talk about the power play, which is first in the Big Ten, but penalty kill has been pretty solid too. And they've been able to pretty consistently generate shorthanded chances this season. I mean, both of the games this weekend, not just Saturday where they had the shorties, but Friday they got plenty of chances. There's been definitely a number of penalty kills this season in which Michigan's gotten better looks shorthanded than their opponent did with the man advantage. And I think that just needs to get a little more recognition.
There was the Beecher breakaway streak, right? Where we had like three or four that were on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
And then speaking of Beecher, that's the other thing is like, that was the line that I wanted to look at this weekend and be like, all right, what are you guys going to do? But Beecher and Samo and Duke, and they all had good weekends. And I mean, chipped in, I think what Mackie had a goal last night, Duke had a power play goal, and then Beecher had the really nice play to set up Granowitz. And I thought they looked pretty good on Friday as well, because that's the line that, I mean, you can look forward to next year and they're probably going to be the centering piece, but that's a line that has started to pop in the second half of this year. And when Michigan gets their Olympians back, all of a sudden now you might have three pretty nice lines.
Yeah, just talking about the way that they play their on the other end. I'm just obviously like this is after they had scored two goals on the 5 minute major, two shorties already. But like Michigan State's two goals on that same major, which I can't remember seeing four goals before in one penalty.
I haven't.
But yeah, but like State's two goals, they were both kind of luck shots. Like or not, they both kind of came back out to the. One of them bounced off a ref and went right into the circle that was the only look they'd gotten up to that point in that whole power play. And then the one that came like right afterwards was another one where it just like deflected right out to the middle where like you weren't expecting, and it went off of was it Pearson's back?
Yeah, the shot just went like hit Pearson between the two and the zero and went into the net, and you're like, all right, I mean,
right.
That's
right.
Kind of hockey sometimes.
Right. So, like, they were better than a power, a penalty kill that gave up, you know, two goals in 5 minutes. But their biggest problem is just taking those. I mean, they got to stop doing that. Like, this is another bad penalty that there's no reason to take. And, you know, you can get away with it with State. But
did they show that replay in stadium?
Yes.
Was it pretty easy to tell from that view, too? Like, because on TV, you could see, all right, yeah, that's going to be a major. But, like, I don't know, man. This is just getting ridiculous because it happens so often that, like, I mean, I think maybe it was one of the guys in the broadcast that said, "There, you don't need to have a check there. You can just kind of skate into the guy and grab him and bump him into the boards and you sort of take him out of the play. But instead, you, like, ram him from 2 or 3 feet away. He goes flying and it's maybe not super dangerous, but, like, it's what the definition of the rule is.
It was, I mean, I had pretty decent seats, thanks Ira Weintraub. And so, like, I watched it pretty well in real time, and the moment before he hit him, I knew it was going to be a major. It was, like, you could tell, like, no, what are you doing? No! Like, and then, like, you know, there were a lot of Michigan fans there, so everyone got mad, and were like, oh, what are you doing? What are you looking at? But, like, then they replay it, and we're like, oh, that's what you're looking at, and that was...
Maybe the whole team has a season-long bingo card, and I don't know. Like, who can get ejected from a game, and then like
I mean, there have been,
they needed an estapa or something.
There have been a lot of questionable ones. I didn't see that one personally, but there have been a lot where I'm just like, oh, really?
The last few, I think, have been pretty legit. There were a couple.
I don't the
time, but
I mean, for me, was the one on Truscott was so soft. Just like the amount of contact there was like, all right, two, but they've changed the rules, so I guess, so that, anyway, not really that important. So Michigan remains first in the pairwise rankings, and I'm not entirely sure about this, but I think Minnesota State might not be able to pass them.
Like, because regardless,
because so Michigan is 5-0-1 against common opponents. And Minnesota State is 7-1. So they should have an edge in the common opponents category, and they have a head-to-head win. So even if Minnesota State passes Michigan, they shouldn't take that comparison. Now, the only thing is that despite that Michigan having a better record against common opponents. College Hockey News thinks that they have the same record. So I'm not entirely sure about that one exactly, but if that is accurate, that those are the records that they have against those teams, then I think that Michigan cannot be passed. So that would give them a pretty big edge on Denver, who's the number three team in the RPI. So they have an edge over them of almost 0.2, which is a big gap. So if you're looking down the road and you're like, okay, you want that number one overall seed, so you get the Atlantic Hockey qualifier in round one, I think Michigan has a pretty good shot at it. They're 9-0-1 since the season resumed from the break. You know, they have Ohio State coming up. That'll be a tough series. But just in terms of like how much of an edge they have a pretty big edge because they should have their guys back for the Notre Dame series, if I'm correct. Or is that not correct?
Yes. Yeah, that should be right. I mean, in general, if Michigan wants the number one overall seed, they should keep winning hockey games. Like, that's...
Well, yeah. What I'm saying is that they might...
That's why people come here for analysis.
I'm saying is that they might have some leeway. They have much less leeway in the Big Ten itself.
Yeah.
Because Minnesota unfortunately swept Ohio State in a series that Michigan probably wanted to see a split in. So they're 2 points back in Michigan, then they finish the season with Penn State and Wisconsin.
Yeah, they do go at Penn State, though, and that's been a tricky spot for Minnesota in recent years. Hockey Valley, never the easiest. And Penn State's an interesting team because somehow they're sixth in the conference, but I think they're very clearly better than Wisconsin and Michigan State. They played well in the non-con, and they just, for some reason, keep breaking down in conference games. But I'm hopeful Michigan could get even a couple points from that, you know, from Penn State. Let's say just taking a game to overtime and maybe getting an OT win, like, it would be really big to get a little bit of help, and I'm definitely more hopeful that Penn State can give you that help and not Wisconsin, who's Minnesota's other opponent.
Well,
although Wisconsin
last night?
Wisconsin did beat Notre Dame last night. I believe the shots were, what, 41-14 in that game, and
something
Wisconsin
like
won. Yeah, so sometimes it can happen. But, yeah, Michigan's in a tough spot. They've got to beat Ohio State this weekend and then get the players back. But the truth is the gauntlet's been laid, right? Minnesota's without a bunch of guys at the Olympics, and they lost their goalie, and they just swept Ohio State on the road. So if you want to win the conference, you got to do the same thing because you got those games at home. I mean, you have no excuse. The team trailing you just upped the ante, and now it's Michigan's turn to follow suit. So Ohio State's a pretty good team, but I don't think they're a really great team. I think they're pretty well coached. They do a lot of things well, but Michigan's got a lot more talent, even with some players out, right? I mean, they've still got plenty of high NHL picks on the team, and it's going to be the home crowd, obviously senior weekend in terms of the regular season for those guys. So a lot of on the line, and you need to pick up wins. Just keep banking wins. You hope for help, but you can't bank on getting help.
Well, and the thing that Michigan did well on Friday is they got goals and a lot of points from their defensemen. I mean, we talked about Hughes and Truscott and everything, but Edwards had a couple of assists too, and that's not even counting Nick Blankenberg. And so when you watch them play, though, I mean, part of the reason that the Avs are so good this year is, like, after their top line, they have defensemen that come at you in waves, and that's sort of what Michigan does. And then, you know, when you add power back into it, obviously, now you have four defensemen that are just coming up and creating chances. And, you know, that's something where Ohio State can probably plan to take away one of Michigan's lines or, you know, clear out the net for certain areas. But when you got guys like Hughes and Edwards and Blankenberg on different lines coming in, I mean, you're just going to get a lot more chances. And Michigan did that well this weekend, and I think that serves them well going into the next weekend against Ohio State.
Yep. One thing about the Penn State non-conference schedule, their performance in it isn't much of a mystery because they played Long Island, Canisius, Niagara, St. Thomas, and Army. They do have a win over North Dakota. So,
I mean, the other player I want to just point out here that's big down the stretch, I mean, Eric Portillo in 11 games since Christmas has a .949 save percentage. And, you know, I think the team defense has been a little bit better than the first half, but he's continued to just be really strong for this team. And a goalie coming up big is kind of what you need, especially next weekend when you're playing a little bit tougher team, still a little shorthanded. Ohio State normally has good goaltending from Jakub Dobish. So you need Portillo to continue coming up big, and he's been stellar in the last month or two. And of course, in those 11 games, Michigan hasn't lost one in regulation. They haven't lost a game in regulation since early December. So this team's playing really, really well right now. They've got a goalie who's locked in. The team is firing, and now you got to just close it out down the stretch. Four more games and three regulation wins, and then we'll see if that's enough to get it done, depending on if you can get help and all that.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you in a little bit.
For listening to the MGO podcast, I'm Seth Fisher along with Brian Cook. RNG stands for Random Number Generator.
Who's got it better than us?